Hi, I'm Lorraine Salazar, and this is Everyday Heroes. Today's show is inspired by a quote, "I don't believe in age, I believe in energy. Don't let age dictate what you can and cannot do." And that is from Tay Porchon Lynch, who is a 99-year-old yoga teacher. Today I will be interviewing Zoe Quechla Maxwell. She is an art therapist, caretaker, mother, world traveler, teacher, who has so much to offer the world and has given so much. She is a 63-year-old art therapist, caretaker, mother, teacher, world traveler, and she will share some of her wisdom and stories with us. Hi, Zoe. Thank you so much for being on the show. I'm so excited to have you and interview you.
My pleasure, Lorraine. This is very exciting.
Yay! For me, too. So I wanted to start out the interview by asking first, where in the world is Zoe now? Because I know you travel a lot.
I'm in Pangnirtung, Nunavut, which is 17 kilometers from the Arctic Circle.
Wow. Oh my, you're always surprising me. Wow. And what brought you there?
Teaching, the experience of being in Nunavut, like to be in the far north. It was great because before that, it was of course Thailand and Cambodia. And so it was extremes, I guess.
Right. But, yes. And that's where I met
really
you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So yeah. So now you went from the warmer weather to, are you in severe cold weather now? Is it pretty freezing?
Well, I know I'm talking to California. It's only minus 16 right now.
Oh my gosh.
But that's Celsius, of course. Yes.
Oh goodness.
So, yeah, freezing.
Yes. Wow. What an experience. And now even for a Canadian, that's cold, right?
Absolutely, it's beautiful. But we've got the sun back now, so that's really nice. We've done almost 6 weeks without sun.
Oh, goodness. Now, is that...
So now we've got it back.
Is that a seasonal thing?
Because we're far north, and I'm in the mountains also, so it's definitely, the sun just doesn't reach those, doesn't reach us.
Okay.
But now it does, and it's very exciting.
Oh, my goodness. Before questions about the art therapy work you do, let's talk a little bit about what life is like living so close to the Arctic.
Well, mostly, you know, if you're dressed well enough, you can do most anything. I don't have a skidoo, but the younger people have skidoos, and so they go fishing a lot and just play in their skidoos. I walk to school. Blizzards are not. Oh, I know. We get 100-kilometer winds on windy days. It's absolutely incredible.
Oh,
it's like living in a hurricane.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness. Very
exciting.
That is. That's just outside your front door that you're walking into.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And are you, do you have conveniences? Is give us like a look at what your day is like at daily life there. Do you have like grocery stores and things next to you, or are people like hunting, gathering things? And is that how you're surviving?
Yeah, a lot of people are hunting and gathering, and we do have the northern. We have a couple grocery stores. Like an avocado costs $6 each.
Oh goodness. That's interesting perspective when you put that into perspective, how much an avocado is there. Wow, how precious it seems there.
Yeah. But sometimes they're $3.99, and we think, like, you have to not pay attention to the prices.
Yes.
There's not a lot of stores. There's the co-op and the northern, and that pretty everything else you ship in, which sometimes cost a fortune, and other times they throw it in, you know, the mailing in if you buy a certain amount of money, a certain
sure.
amount of items.
Are there a lot of people where you live? Is it a big community? Is it smaller?
Well, for the north it is. There's about 2,000.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's that's pretty small. That's not a lot of people.
No. There's not, but there's no, but traffic is good.
That's a plus. You're not going to get in LA traffic in that kind of environment.
there's no ice roads either. Like other communities have ice roads in the far north, but here you just, it's limited. Like people ship their cars in, and then it's you're just in this small local area that you can drive.
So what did you do when you weren't, when you didn't have light for 6 weeks?
Well, you just get this haze. You just don't see the sun. It's in February when you see the sun and you go, oh my God, I missed you so much. We have a big celebration. The school always has a celebration about when the sun comes. So, you know, we just all take note of it.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. That is so different. How wild. And do you just, you keep your lights on, you know, when you want to at night and just kind of make your own kind of day and night schedule?
Well, pretty much, but really a cool thing. I'm teaching school right now. I'm teaching art and English and all sorts of wild things. But on the walk home, which is like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, like when it's dark, I walk home and the northern lights are dancing right beside me.
Oh, how beautiful.
It really is quite magical. Yeah.
Wow. How long do the northern lights last as far as their season?
All year. All year.
Oh,
but the colder they are, but it's dark and then you can see them. And as soon as they get really spectacular, you just have to promise not to call anyone. If you call anyone, they just go out for some reason. And you say, go out, go check out the lights. and they'll go out and they've all disappeared. It's pretty funny. Yeah.
Now, what made you decide on this next place to go? As you said, you were in Cambodia and, you know, the Asian part of the world, and which is, you know, a lot warmer. And now you've moved to this cold region. And what brought you specifically there?
I always just wanted to experience the north. I wanted to experience Nunavut, like the far north, and just check it out. Like, there was nothing that raw. Like, I was just felt moved to be here.
How beautiful. Oh, just the free spirit in you. It just led you.
Yeah, I followed it.
That's awesome. It takes us to great places, right? sometimes scary
Absolutely.
Places, unknown places, but always great and learning places.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that is so cool. And so you're walking through snow to get to school. Have you done sledding or anything? Do they have sledding?
I do have a little sled on my porch that I use when I have young visitors want to go sledding, and then we sled. It's sort of icy, so it's faster. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of tundra here. There's a lot of rocks and bushes, so you don't get the same, like going up the hill, it's just different. So I sled on the roads, and you know the roads aren't very busy, so it's pretty fun.
Is it kind of like living in the bush, like the bush of...
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much.
Is it okay?
Pretty much.
Just to kind of set the scene of where your location is and what life is like. Oh, yeah. Wow.
And, it's gorgeous. It's very gorgeous.
And now, when do you get summer and how does that look? Is there still snow around most places, or will you have some times of, you know, where you can actually plant things and grow some things?
Oh, there's no growing here.
No growing. Okay.
But the summer does get up to 20 couple days, but I've only been here at the very end of the beginning of the summer and the end of the summer. So, I haven't really experienced the summer here, but what the students tell me is that it's, like one young student said, Zoe, I'm moving. She said we had summer and it was 10 minutes.
Oh my goodness, that is cold.
Yeah.
So you came here to do art therapy work and teach other things you mentioned. Tell us a little bit about your art therapy work and how it's beneficial there, and particularly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, here, I'm still, I have like a short, probably about 40 hours left on my practicum, and then I'm good to go.
Wow.
So I work with, like, it's a fly-in community. There's, we do have doctors that come in once in a while, and we do have, there is a health center, but we don't have a lot of support.
What's so a fly-in community?
A fly-in community means there's no way you can get here any other way.
Okay, got it. Boom, yeah. You got to fly in. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So here I work with kids that have that don't have a lot of support. So a lot of times the art therapy is their way of energy. It's all energy. Like, they just communicate with actually that's a good question. There's one little guy that actually does like four pieces right away. He just takes the paint. He finger paint usually, because I really, with little ones, that's the best you can do with them, because they don't have a cognitive part of their brain.
Mm-hmm.
So they just work stuff out, and they do become calmer. Like, in the school system, they've reported that the students are calmer, the ones that need to have some outlet.
How do people get their emotions out through art therapy, through drawing, through painting, especially if someone has never picked up a paintbrush before, or a crayon or a marker?
It's amazing. Like, art is mark making. And if we always remember that, whatever marks people make is exactly right, is exactly perfect. And sometimes when you're actually in therapy, one of the most amazing things is people will, they allow their subconscious or unconscious to come in and deliver a message or a purpose. They have somehow they're telling you things. And and it doesn't matter what age. So you don't have to be, art therapy is not, you don't have to be an artist whatsoever to do art therapy. And what's amazing is how much freedom that gives someone to respond to emotion or trauma or life, their own well-being.
Absolutely. Mm. And so through doing this, what have you found, and this is just, I don't know if there's any difference, but I'm just going to put it out there, between working in a hot climate and a cold climate? Like, do you notice that there's, I don't know, different things that people bring collectively to their art? Does it affect them at all, whether you live in this, you know, really cold climate or really hot climate? Because I know you've been kind of everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's that, for me, art is magical. Like, to connect with people through art is amazing. And I find that's the thread that unites us all, I think when I left you, I went to Cambodia.
That's right.
And I worked with children and women from the sex trade. Like, they were,
I remember they were, you were telling me were, that was your next plan to go, yep, work with recent people that had just gotten out of the sex trade.
So one of the things is, I got to work with a whole bunch of little boys, and they were the ages of 9 to 14, and it was their last, they'd been working with some counselors about just getting on and what they needed in their life and all the right things. And the counselors were really familiar with art therapy, and they asked me if I could do something. And of course, it's March. And in March in Canada, we think, the wind, you know, let's go fly a kite.
Right.
Well, and I said, let's fly a kite. Let's make kites. And these guys said, Zoe, there's no wind in March. okay, no problem. Let's make a kite and we'll run around. And so what we did is wrote where their highest heart was going to be, where they saw their hearts in their future, where they saw their intelligence in the future, where they saw their physical health in the future, and where they felt their education in the future. And then we wrote them on, and they wrote them in Khmer, which is Cambodian language. And then we made kites, and to watch these little guys make kites, so some of them, we found out, were from kite-making areas, so they felt like they were home. And it was an amazing process. And then, this is the best, Lorraine, you're going to love this. So then we went outside to run around, and didn't the wind come up and blow for an hour?
So no.
They got to fly their kites.
That's God. Yeah. That's a miracle. That's a God thing right there. Cause that's too amazing. Pure magic. You stuck with your gut. You made kites and then you got the wind for your kites. How beautiful. What a gift. What a gift. What a blessing. Oh my goodness. It's almost like I'm giving you hope, you know, like, yes, here's some hope. Life can change. You know, it's like a straight, just a straight gift. Wow, that gives me goosebumps. And that is...
Yeah, we just have to prep.
That is heavy work you're doing, Zoe. Like working with, you know, especially these younger children that are coming from this kind of life of, you know, being... you know, sex trade victims, and it's just horrific. How do you deal with that? That's like for you, because you're one of the most positive, cheery people I've ever met. I mean, consistently.
Thank you. At one point, because I also adopted and raised four older children at older ages, and people used to ask, like, oh, I'm saving the world. But I realized I don't have an inclination of saving the world. I just don't see myself as separate from it. So, so being with the boys flying a kite was exactly perfect for what it meant. Like it wasn't. I got probably as much out of it, if not more, than they did. So it was, yeah. So. Yeah, it's for me, that's what I've come up to this year, is that there's no part of me wants to save the world. I just don't understand being separate from it. Got so it. I do what I can, and I just get bonuses, man.
That's amazing. And I also want to mention that you're 63. Like, you are still rocking the world at 63 and living in the Arctic and being amazing and being super productive and adding so much to the world. You're not stopping.
No. I still probably have more energy than most people.
What do you attribute that to?
I'm not. I think it's just about letting go. I think it's about being part of the world. Being part of the world, like going with the flow, going with the energy, mm-hmm. not stopping, like being willing to grow. Willing to change. And while I'm doing that, it almost takes age away. I didn't go to university till I was 40.
Wow.
And the students there said, oh, don't ask Zoe that question. She doesn't see any black and white. She's just all gray.
Okay. Yes.
So I think that's, yeah. So I think
and you're very intuitive. You're a very intuitive person.
Thank you.
Yeah. Going with
that
the flow, trusting your gut for sure. And your outlook on life. You know, being a part of it, being one of a whole, not separate from it.
Absolutely.
That's pretty insightful.
I think that's, I'm going to have to do more work on that one. Like just be really clear of being, just being in the flow, like being in the,
it's
the zeitgeist or in the juice of life. Yeah.
And going back to your work with children, and I know you work with people of all ages too, is there a part of you that gets attached where you're just like, I want to take these kids with me and like rescue them and save them? And like, which is obviously too much for anybody to do. And, you know, but how does that, do you ever have any of those feelings?
I think I did when I was younger.
Okay.
And I feel now that what I want to do, I believe my gift is, or what I've come to, is that we is to allow people to see that they are enough, that they're powerful, who they are. Like, they have all the right tools to do their life well. Like, they, you know, when we, it doesn't matter, like, stuff happens to every one of us. And when we take it, or we sit with it, we also know the answers, and we know we're okay, and we know that those horrendous things happen to us, that we're not them. And so I think for myself, I'm clearer about that for me. So I'm hoping to teach whoever my clients are the same thing, that they have all the tools to make their lives rich and interesting and wonderful.
Empowering.
Yeah, it sounds simple, but it probably is. But it's huge. Like, it's huge. Like, I can't. There's so many horrendous things happening in this world, and to know that we all have all the right tools to get through it. I'm not quite sure how to simplify that, but that's it.
That actually was very good. Exactly how you said it. Yes. Is there anything that you know of that people can do to help people, you know, like sex trade victims get out of that, you know, and you know, just atrocities, like children in that, you know, having to be the victims of sex trade at such, you know, innocent ages and just being so terribly young? Is there anything that just you see as just an average person that we could do to make that not so and right that wrong?
I think we have to just be kind to everybody. That's, you know, it's to make room for people that they can grow, the room for people that they can go outside their comfort zone, or from being discomforted. Like, I think as people, we just have to be kind. If we can remember kindness, I think the world will change. And I'm old enough to know it doesn't happen overnight.
Absolutely.
But if we just keep remembering to be kind, it makes room for everybody to grow.
It takes work and mindfulness of that, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, yeah.
Do you think
some days we don't? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Do you think talking about these topics that are really hard and agonizing to talk about, how should I say this? Takes the power of keeping it like something that we don't want to talk about and don't want to, you know, like really see happening? Do you think it helps by talking about these topics of, you know, sex trade victims or drug addiction or, you know, all these things that we just sometimes are ugly things, ugly, gross things we don't want to hear or have to talk about?
Well, absolutely. I think what we have to do is also get rid of our own shame. We have shame about everything. That's sort of how the world seems to work sometimes. That's how we sell things or become less than. But if we can deal with our judgment of what someone's life is or isn't, or what they've gone through, is really I don't know. I do believe that people really want to do well. And I think I have to believe that. So I don't know if I'm making myself believe that or it just is true.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, you know, when you look at people and look at, you know, when, you know, we're children and you see that we're good. We're innately wanting to be playful and be free spirits, and I think all of that equates to what you're saying. We want to do well. We want to, you know, we want to be that through life. And then things happen, and then you're maybe unsure about how to cope or deal with them because You know, they can be from minor traumas to extreme horrific traumas. And then it's like how to work through those things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we have to be kind. Like, it's not just, there's adults that have just never got past their childhood trauma. So they're stuck there. And if we can be as kind to them as we would be to a 3-year-old, then yeah, we, you know, it's patience and kindness. And it's hard. We have to work on it. That's our life's mission, is to be good people.
And kind to ourselves.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Now, you adopted 4 children of your own. Tell us about that. They were older children. You decided to take that on. What possessed you? That's a big decision. And that's a big decision for somebody that changes lives, their lives, your life, everything. And how did you do that? And did you adopt them all at once, or did you adopt them, you know, consecutively? Years apart, spacing of adopting them?
Okay. Well, the first two were brother, sister.
Okay.
And then a few years later, the next two are brother, sister team.
Okay.
God
bless you.
Actually, it happened. Yeah, it was back in the day when I ran this crazy funky restaurant,
How fun! Did you cook? Cook there too?
I did the baking.
Oh, I did look at you! Yeah, all these lives.
Yeah.
How cool!
Yeah.
that's a whole nother interview, Zoe.
Yeah.
Talking about food and restaurants. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, I was in the restaurant, and there was something. I've always been connected to the news of what's happening, or, you know, it's totally intriguing to me. And at one point, there was something happened about kids or something in the news. And I said, the government should da da da. You know, I had a young person mouthy piece about me, and the government should.
Of course, right? Good for you.
Yeah. So, yeah, thanks. And someone said, Zoe, if you believe the government should do that, then you're the one who has to do that. And that was it. That's all it took.
No.
And yeah. And so I learned a lot of things.
So did you go out to adopt these children? Did you get on a waiting list, or were these children that you knew of in your community that needed adopting?
Well, the people from the, in Alberta, people from the south adopt from the north, people from the north adopt from the south.
Okay. And where were you at this particular time?
Hello. Minor hockey police. Okay.
Okay. I'm on an interview. I'll be back. You can come and rest me later. They're making a...
Zoe, you're so popular everywhere you go.
No, they're fundraising, and here they have this really cool fundraiser because it's such a small town. But then they arrest you, and it costs you $5 not to be arrested.
Oh my gosh!
$5 not to go. Yeah,
I love this.
And then,
you serious?
It's so fun. It's so silly. Like, sometimes people get together. And we'll give $30 to, $30 to keep someone in jail for an hour.
$50 if they want them in there for the whole day. That's so funny.
Oh,
how
it's only
fun.
2 hours.
Oh, yeah, okay. There's a limit.
Yeah. I didn't realize it was happening now. So otherwise, I would have had some cash out to put somebody else in jail for fun.
Put them in or let them out. That is fun.
Yeah,
I might have to start something like that here. I like that.
Yeah, but the traffic would be huge there.
Hey? Oh, forget it. Just getting to jail. Yeah.
Yeah.
It would lose its appeal. Yeah.
Here they skidoo you back and forth.
Oh, see, that's fun.
Yeah.
So tell us about these children.
See, now I have a reason why I wasn't arrested. Yay!
Oh, good for you. You got out of jail. No yeah, one would yeah, arrest yeah, you.
Yeah.
So you're working in the restaurant, and you realize you're dissatisfied with how the government is doing some things, making some calls about these issues. So you decide to do something about it yourself.
The government wasn't separate from me. That I was it. Like, you know, if you want change, I have to be the change.
Right. The famous quote, Gandhi, be the change you wish to see in the world.
I know. And why did I agree to it? I don't know. That was great.
Right. Children. Yeah. It's a big one. It's a big decision. And so did you go through the process where you said, where were you at the time? Were you in Northern Canada or Southern?
Southern. Okay. I was in the Rocky Mountains.
Okay.
So, yeah. And we had a funky little restaurant.
How cool. And what was the name of the restaurant?
What's that?
What was the name?
Zig's Junction.
Junction?
Yeah. Zig's Junction.
Oh, Zig's.
Z-I-G-G.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. And so you had to apply to adopt for the children in the north.
It's only Edmonton, which isn't, you know, for you it's far north, but for there it's not that far north.
Okay.
And so, yeah. And so out of the deal, I have a granddaughter coming to visit in a couple weeks.
I remember you talking to me about her. Awesome. So she's going to come visit you. What a great experience for her too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And she's 15, so she's the same age as the grade 10s. And so it'll be great.
Wonderful. Yeah. That's a great age to see how other people are living in the world, right? And just give you some perspective on your own life. And I think it's a great experience for everybody should be able to experience it as a teenager. Because you realize there's more than your bubble you're in and your area you're in.
Yeah, yeah. And but the same price, we could be going to Thailand for a couple months.
Go hit those
I'm
beaches.
I'm just complaining a little.
Yeah, exactly. I know. I know. So much fun. But you know what? It sounds like it sounds so beautiful there in just such a different way and such a rare way, a way that not everyone gets drawn to, and not where everyone lands and gets to experience. So how cool.
Yeah.
You guys can go to Thailand in a couple years after she's in the cold, then she'll really appreciate that warm weather.
Oh, she loves the adventure. Like she likes anything that adds adventure to it. Yeah.
Yeah. And how long is she staying? Is she going to be there for a while with you?
I'm trying to figure it out because I have a sister in Ottawa and I have a niece in Iqaluit. So it's on the way. So I want to make sure she gets to visit her relatives too.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but she'll come and we'll laugh and it's all good.
That is so awesome. Do you have any more grandchildren as of now?
I have another granddaughter that my sister adopted. It was Rachel, that's Janaea's mom.
Yes.
Right. Her brother, Jason, who we got, was a couple years older than Rachel, was five when we got her, and Jason was almost about six and a half. Anyway, he has a daughter, and he hasn't done life really well, but he wanted to make sure. I think when she was four, he'd asked if Jamie could adopt her. And Jamie did. So that was great. And Jamie has a herd of kids anyway of her own.
Aww.
And so, and she's doing really well also.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I mean, I think, you know, kudos to him for asking for help when he knew life is all about surprises. And sometimes we're not ready for the things that happen to us or that we decide or we choose to let, you know, we choose to have happen. But either way, things can be tough, things can be hard. And I think we're just all trying our best to sort it out and get through it and lean on each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and what was that?
We're all we're all, you know, no one's going to get there first. No one's going to be, you know, we all got to get there together, wherever it is.
What was the biggest, let's see, surprise, I'm trying to think how I should say this, about becoming a mom and becoming a mom suddenly?
Learning about attachment disorder, that was a weird thing.
And how, what is that exactly?
So one of the things that, well, the first two came, and I knew after 2 years they hardly did anything that you would even think was, like, they did everything they thought you thought they would like. And so I didn't understand it before, except I knew that we were in trouble. I said to Gerard at the time, I said, you know what, we're in trouble. I said, I don't know how to get through to these kids. It's okay to make mistakes.
So they would do everything
okay
to please
to
you.
Not agree with me.
Okay.
Yeah, and the other two came, and they were like, oh, you love us? Watch this. And they would be wild and crazy. Oh, you still love us? Watch this.
So they would
and
push
they
boundaries.
Were, and, you, and they were just checking it out. And there's a certain point, and it was just, it was amazing. Like, it was exactly what they needed to know it's okay.
To the second two, you mean to know it's okay that they yeah. could make mistakes, they could be imperfect, but you're still going to love them and care for them.
Absolutely. Exactly.
That's interesting. It's interesting how they were both so different, and what a different experience for you to go through two different types of, you know, kids behaving, you know, differently through that process of being adopted.
But also helps for when in teaching, or it helps working with kids. The ones that give you the hardest times, they're the ones I know want to make it. They want to make sure you're going to be there anyway. Like when their worlds get blown up, you're still going to be there. And that's what they're doing to check you out, to make sure that, you know, if you can put up with all their silly shenanigans, then they're going to trust you.
They're testing you. They're testing you. Right. Seeing if you're there for the long haul, the long run. I'm sure there were many times going through that you really are put to the test, and it's like, goodness, this is hard, but I got to persevere. Yeah. For you, what was your go-to to get through times like that? Because you're such a positive, cheery, and strong person. Yeah. How did you get through those times? And you were married at the time?
Well, I lived
you
in the
You had a partner?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we did pretty good. And now I was in the Rocky Mountains. We hiked, we skied, we biked. I think the earth was healing for the kids. It was super healing for me. I'm at home in the mountains. Like, I'm at home, hiking, skiing, biking, you know, breathing in fresh air. So I think that was the perfect thing. And the ultimate thing, if this is what I was going to say, with the curling iron, she had burnt the carpet. She had left it, burnt the carpet, but these yoga pants, you know, after when you're 30 something and you buy at that time, they were like, I don't know, $60 yoga pants, which
right.
I wouldn't normally buy, but I did because I liked them. And they, and she had taken the curling iron and it burnt them. And it was like, oh my God. But I was late for yoga. So I hurried up and went to yoga. By the time I got home, I wasn't mad anymore. So I thought, wow, everyone should just do yoga.
Agree. Totally agree. As a big yoga advocate. Yeah. Yes. Exactly. And time, right? We should take some time before we react to things, because usually that time gives us a little buffer, and it really transforms and changes how we initially wanted to react.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Sometimes just taking a little space.
Mm-hmm.
So now you went to school at 40. You decided to go back to school. Okay, that's another big life-changing decision, and you just kind of said, I'm going to do this. And what made you decide to, at 40, do it?
Well, at 40, we divorced. It was, you know, we both put in half, so we didn't even have to have a lawyer or anything. And we just decided that was enough. And that was good. And the only thing I ever wanted to do in regret in that life at that point was going to art school. So then I went to art school. And it was great. It was everything I expected to. I only had Rachel left at home. And Rachel was just finishing high school. And so it was perfect. It was perfect timing. And 40 to me is like all my friends would be, you know, I just thought that was the best age ever. Like 40 was like going through this ephemeral door where there was no black and white, where it's just like, oh, I get it. That's how I felt at that age.
Right.
Yeah.
You get it as far as life had, like things had clicked for you?
Yeah, like it was just, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That it was, whatever I make it, it's it. And sometimes I still argue with it, and sometimes I go, you know, I have my little panic moments, but mostly I just trust that I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing.
What type of art did you want to start out doing? What was your goal when you started art school? Was it always art therapy?
No, not at all. I was just thinking art. I just wanted to, you know, I was the kid that always drew on my pencils and every book and everything. I was always drawing. And then, I just thought art was my calling. In fact, it was the restaurant. I got tired of the restaurant. It was enough. Like it wasn't fun anymore.
So did you still have the restaurant at that time? So you started college while you still had the restaurant?
No, no, we had divorced and he got the restaurant. I got the house. It was a good deal.
Yep. Good.
And so then I went to art school. And it was the adventure. Like, I felt it really decadent. Like, I'm one of those people that believe, you know, education's wasted on the young. Life is wasted on the young.
Right.
Yeah. So, it was good. It was all good. And from there I went and got, I lived in not quite your neck of the woods, in Oakland. And it was a sister campus to... Boulder, Colorado, Naropa.
Ooh,
so with Matthew Fox, and we did the, it was my master's in spirituality, which means I know nothing, but it was wonderful.
Right?
That was a great, yeah. So, so yeah.
Wow. And then what led you to art therapy through that? How did that find you or you find it?
I from there I went to teaching. I was actually in South Korea teaching English as a second language just to have an adventure. And I'm thinking, oh, I like this gig. And then I learned to, I decided I should get an education degree. So I have an education degree now too.
Oh my goodness.
And then while doing that, I realized to connect to kids and connect is through art. Like art is, you know, the imagination is everything to allow kids to see their own intelligence or to allow them to explore their own worlds rather than teach them rote is what's much more interesting to me. But the approach of being with people and being with art is really, I found that pretty powerful. So yeah, I went to art therapy. Like I'm almost done that degree, so that yay
congratulations on being almost finished.
Thanks.
That's amazing, and you know, a long commitment, and you're helping so many people along the way. Before you did art therapy, I know through our talks that we have had in the past that you worked with the elderly and those in hospice. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience? And again, you're so multi, just faceted and talented, and you've worked with so many different people, so many different walks of life. But how was that experience for you?
I loved it. It sort of validated like life, the magic of life. Like what I did was working with the elderly. I didn't necessarily work with the elderly as I was in hospice, and I ended up working a lot with people with Alzheimer's, and that was because there was big centers with elderly people. A lot of them it would help Alzheimer's. And it was amazing to me because it was my first dose of them, really, of people with Alzheimer's. And the first time there was an elderly woman in, she used to say, I was visiting a woman with a brain tumor, and they'd put her in the elderly wing because she was only 50, but they didn't know what to do with her because her family was a little afraid of that they wouldn't be able to take care of her.
That's so young.
She did end up going home.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, there was I was visiting her, and she said, and there was a little voice going, help me, help me. And so I jumped up, you know, like, oh, I better go help somebody.
Sure.
And she said, oh, sit down, Zoe. She says, this woman, that's all she does. That's what she says. And I said, okay. And then I went to visit her, this other woman, that week again, but she was sleeping. And then I was walking out, this little arm clutched mine and went, help me. So I knew who the help me woman was.
Right.
And I said, well, if there's any way you can tell me what to do or what you need, I'll do it. And she was in a wheelchair. So I pushed her, ended up pushing her wheelchair. She pointed right out through the front door, and which was really amazing if you knew her condition. And so, and I told her we wouldn't make a mad escape, and I came back. But with those words or with that experience, I knew that, that it wasn't like that these people were important. And then my favorite story is I came back there another day to sit with somebody in that was dying, and as I was going through, there was all this noise from a bed that had a lot of metal on it, and what they had brought this woman with Alzheimer's out in the hall, so they were cleaning her room, and so but she was making lots of noise, and so I said the same thing. I said, if you can tell me what you need or I can help you, that'd be great. And she, all of a sudden, it's like a veil almost. And it came out and she said, what do I be? And it was really incredible. And I do before I went to sit with people in hospice or vigil, I would meditate or have a really, a pretty good practice. And so, and then when I got there, I was in that space where all was good. And I went, wow, that's, you know, what does that mean? And I just took a few seconds to process it. And I said, be love. Oh, she says, be love. Can I kiss you? Of course, yes. Mm-hmm. And she gave me a kiss and I love you. And we did that a couple times. And then that curtain came back and she was, for all sense and purposes, she was gone. But it was, for me, it was the magic. That's all we have is we get to be love. So that was very profound.
Oh my God. That's beautiful, Zoe. And it's when she came to consciousness for just those moments, it's, you know, to have that be what was in her awareness and in her conscience for you to say, be love. I mean,
yeah.
You have to believe she took that with her when she went, you know, back to, into that, you know, to the state of not being so conscious. I believe that. I mean, that's.
Well, I'm not, you know. Yeah, I'm not sure, though, that, you know, Alzheimer's, sometimes I think, or through that process, I was thinking, you know, maybe we just, you know, we project a lot of things, mother, father, aunt, uncle, sister, whatever, and really there's this incredible soul, and if we just stop, and like, I thought the message was for me. I thought, wow, thanks.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. That's all we can be is love. That's mm-hmm. all we, and it's.
Absolutely.
And we have to just keep working on it forever.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I totally agree. What was that work for me? That, again, that's like, could be very considered like very heavy work, right? You're working with people that, you know, it's their last part of the journey as far as here, you know, in this life. What for you? What did you do for yourself to not bring that home or not feel the heaviness of that, maybe sadness or, you know, some of the things that we would associate with, you know, losing somebody, like sadness or frustration or, you know, those kinds of emotions?
I you know, for me, it just felt magic. It just felt like, wow, like we're not, you know, to think that life looks like this and I have to be like that, I think life blew up for me anyway, you know, just with just life's challenges. Not that I had any horrendous big challenges, but just, oh, that's okay. Like, all what I've learned so up to that point was that we're just real, we're souls trying to, you know, to be in this world, and the world's a little bit crazy. And so I don't think I felt any sadness like I do for sitting in vigil and people would die, or sitting with people and connecting with people. And I would have my wonderful cries and just really enjoy them, because I knew that it has to be. But the Alzheimer's experiences were absolutely, were good experiences. Like, they were, wow, this is bigger than I think it is. You know, that kind of thing.
Did you feel it on a spiritual level, like on a different level?
Well, absolutely. Like, it felt like there's another layer.
Right. It was like confirmation, there's right? Like, yeah. We know there's another realm, another layer, the next, you know, something after.
Well, I've got two minutes. There's another, when they sit vigil with someone's dying, so you know, you hold their hand, and it helps the nurses in every area because, you know, they don't all have time to go to sit. So anyway, that's part of the hospice group. So one time I was sitting with this woman in the same, it was a huge elderly place, and in one wing they have a lot of people with Alzheimer's, and it's the more noisier, louder, and sometimes at night it's scary, like they scream or do things. And I had to sit with this woman, and I sat with her, and she was 90-something years old. She had end-state cancer, end-state Alzheimer's, and she was, for all purposes, she was dying. And the nurse came along, and he just, you know, they checked their bodies and their diapers and stuff, and they whipped her blanket off, and her body froze. Mm. And for me, that was so huge. Like, this is the soul, and she has dignity. We need to acknowledge the dignity.
Absolutely.
So and then less than like a few weeks, and usually you get sit vigil once a month. But anyway, a few weeks later, I'm sitting with someone. As I was got called to a different elderly place, and this place was actually one of the hospice workers volunteers. She was the boss of it. She wasn't a volunteer, that was her job. And she so it was that place, and there they actually were, like, I sat with this elderly woman. Her name was Align, which was, for me, was huge. She, you know, aligned to life or whatever.
Aligned.
Anyway,
that,
she was also
very meaningful. Mm-hmm.
She was also 90-something years old, end-state cancer, and since end-state Alzheimer's. So what was amazing was I sat with her, but the nurses and the people there would go, oh, Align, you know, we're just going to check you out now. We're just going to make sure. I hope you're okay. Do you have enough blankets? I'll just check this. And they were so kind. And so it was really incredible. And then I went home, and I didn't think anything of it. And I got called a few days later, and it was for the same woman. And I went, and I'm thinking, and my drive there was about 20 minutes. And I thought, what am I supposed to be learning? Like, why did this happen? This is very rare, or how it happened, and the two of them so close together, and what they are. And the same woman I'm getting called back for, because she hadn't died that then. And so I went there, and I was just, like, in that state, because I did some meditation, and I, you know, did some yoga and relaxed. And then I got there, and the other hospice worker was leaving, and I said, Align, it's so nice to see you. Thank you for teaching me about Alzheimer's. Mm. And she died, like, instantly. I just had to go back and thank her.
Oh, my gosh. She was ready, and it's like she was waiting for that moment.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
She held on.
It was, yeah. It was, Yeah, it was really cool.
Wow, that gives me goosebumps. You know, that's... I think that's, you bring up a really good point, and I think that's something we forget about a lot in our culture, and, you know, probably every culture is, we are all souls, and we all do deserve to live and die with dignity, right? From each other.
Absolutely.
You know, I think when we're on death's door and we're weak, it's easy to forget that we're actually, you know, still living and breathing, or we were once very, you know, vital and full of life and strong. And it's, you know, it's almost like, you know, when the weak need the most dignity, because it's so easy to take advantage of it and just forget it, you know, throw it out the window. That's a great story and lesson, and so much comes from that, that you just shared with us. Thank you.
What? It was my pleasure. I loved it.
What was life for you like growing up? What were some big things for Zoe? Do you have siblings?
Yeah, I came from a family of 8 kids. Back in the days when your parents had one car, my mom stayed home, of course, with 8 kids, and my dad worked for the railroad. He's still alive. He's busy in art now. He retired from the radio, from the railway, but he does art and he does film and he's written some books. So he's pretty, he's
amazing.
Quite a guy to be. Yes, absolutely. And he is in his late 80s. I was 8 kids. We lived in, my dad likes to say we were the four older ones were his poorer kids, and the other ones, you know, once then he started making more money and stuff, so they were better off. We didn't notice it. so we have, you know, it was life, or being a kid in the late 50s, early 60s. You had your own self autonomy. We had to go home when the streetlights came on. We played a lot.
And this is in Canada.
The neighborhood was full of kids. What's that?
And this is in Canada.
Yeah. It's that was in Windsor.
Windsor.
So it's really close to Detroit.
Okay, yes.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. And then I'm just curious, where did you fall in the 8? Were you part of the first 4, the last 4, youngest, oldest?
Second eldest.
Okay. Wow.
My older sister is like 11 months. We're 11 months apart.
Okay. So you're close.
Yeah.
In age.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we're going to be getting pretty close to wrapping it up here. So I'm just going to be winding it down and just have one or two more questions, but one question is, you do travel a lot and you go many places. What is it that you've learned the most about traveling, and what is it that you love about it?
What I learned most is that we're all the same. Like we want to be seen and we want to be loved, and it's really cool. No matter where you go, I think people are genuinely good. And what I love about traveling is I think, not that it doesn't happen in everyday life, but I find when I travel, things are more magical. And so I don't know if it's because I let go of a preconceived idea, but I find that, it's like the wind in Cambodia, or just meeting the people I meet, or one time actually I was going from, Chiang Mai, which is Thailand.
I love
it.
Beautiful.
Going back to Canada. And there I said, and I always, you know, I would go for these visa runs, but I always would have 1 day or 2 days. I had to pay the extra. And for some reason, on the way through, I went, okay, universe, please, just today, can we not have to pay any extra? And the guy looked at my visa and my card and all the papers there, and he went, oh, and he went away. And I thought, oh, well, you know, he came back, stamped this thing, and just gave it to me. Let me go. I said, thank you, universe.
Good karma. Zoe, you have good karma. You give so much to the world. It's nice when you get these little, like, tokens back, right? That's so great. Zoe, thank you so much. We got to go for the interview, but boy, I could talk to you for hours and days. You're just so much fun and just always so much fun to talk to. And I love hearing your stories and just knowing you as a person. You're amazing. And thank you for all the work that you do out in the world to make it a better place and all the lives you touch and people you help. Thank you. You truly are a special spirit.
Thank you, Lorraine. That's wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. That was fun.
It was very fun.
My interview. Yeah.
Yes. It was my pleasure. And thank you for being on the show. It was great.
Just come on up north and we'll have another chat.
I can't wait. Sounds okay. Awesome. Thanks, Zoe.